Yoga Vashishta, Part 2 by Swami Surya Devananda. Prayer before study. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness, which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. The last time we spoke about four things, and it was all based on chapter one. The background, and the important part about the background, was during his travels, Rama examined things afresh and became apathetic to the status quo, which did not seem adequate to his scrutiny. We too can examine things fresh, and we too can be on a pilgrimage every day. To be on a pilgrimage means to be in the nature of a pilgrim. I don't know, and I would like to find out. So if we examine things afresh and go out with the same spirit, we too might get apathetic. Apathetic doesn't mean to hate anything. It just means to see things for what they are. When you're overly sympathetic, you're overly associated with things and there are inflated values or not so true values that we ascribe to things. To see things as they are without the interference of these hidden values of our mind will cause us to re-examine the status quo that exists in our life. And we too will find that they are not adequate to the scrutiny. It is only when that happens that there is a slight awakening. This examining everything is not a faulty way of dealing with things, that you look at everything and find fault with it. Far from it. It is a faultless way of dealing with things, which means to deal with things or to see things as they are, for what they are, to know when they should be dealt with, and therefore with no interference of concepts and faulty notions and the lot. This is a faultless way of dealing with things. And this comes when we examine everything afresh all the time. Why can't we? We have to examine it. Why examine it with concepts in our mind? Why not examine it fresh as it happens and lighten the mind of its burden? All this again pushes that inner awakening. Awakening is the result of this examined living, and it makes change effortless, as then it is not seen as change, but what is best. When you examine things afresh, it seems like the right or the natural thing to do, and you can feel in the background the rumbling about the habitual way to do. That habitual way to do is conditioning. And the natural way to do, or to do what needs to be done, comes about by a fresh scrutiny every time. When we do this for a while, we naturally come to the crossroads. There is a gap between letting go of the old notions and conditioning and seeing things afresh for as they are, because we don't take the accepted take on things. We insist on seeing things as they are. And at that time, habit collides with this awakened living. And one feels partly caught and partly freed. We feel, if I do things by this fresh examination, I have some relationships, some things that could be shook up or could be shaken up a little bit. And if I go by that, I'm going to close the door to my awakened living. So we come to a crossroads. Where do we go from here? Today, chapter 2 begins, and our topics are the liberated sage, self-effort, the essence of all scriptures, and the course of action. Greetings. Let us start with today with our first topic, which is the liberated sage. Just hearing these words, a liberated sage, the mind conjures up fantastic images of what this person ought to look like or could look like, what he would walk like, what he would talk like, and the whole lot. Well, it may not be, because to be liberated is to be liberated from one's own notions. When you have seen something for what it is, does that necessarily make you something different, where you walk different, you look different, you change your haircut, or whatever? All of that, my friends, is not necessary. The most important thing is to awaken from our slumber of habitual living and to start seeing things as they are, to do what needs to be done as it arises, without an aftertaste or without holding on to a memory of it. So there are three things. There should be no interference of the mind, one, before, two, during, and three, after. You can use this acronym, BDA. There should be no interference of the mind throughout the process. The mind's job is relegated to data, to doing things, to remembering things, and it helps you with that. But the inner intelligence, which also knows what the mind is doing, which knows when the mind is turbulent, directly engages life. So this inner intelligence watches the mind, which automatically prevents it from interfering with life, and deals with life. For that, naturally, it has to be empowered. And it doesn't come about automatically. It comes about with practice for most. Most don't have the ability to awaken instantly, and that too takes practice. So the practice of staying awake through everything we do is called awakened living. And when you do that for a while, you see through your own notions, you see through your own ideas and conditioning, and that is abandoned for awakened living. The Yoga Vashishta has a very interesting sort of brief statement about the liberated sage. It says, the liberated sage is one who by nature is not swayed by any sense pleasure. By nature means it's natural to him not to be swayed by any sensorial pleasure. His inner intelligence is fully awakened and he is not swayed by it. Does that mean he doesn't enjoy anything? My friends, there is a difference between enjoying things as they come about naturally and being swayed by them. Being swayed is losing your center of gravity to them, which means the inner intelligence goes to sleep. So that is the first qualification. And second thing, who does what needs to be done without any motivation or incentive, like fame or things of that kind. If you're a doctor, very good. Treat people. If you're a teacher, very good. Teach people. What does fame and incentive and all of that have to do? If you do a good job and you work hard every day, you would have inner satisfaction, and whatever ought to come will come to you naturally. And you might think, well, I don't get enough, or enough may not come, or that's not the way the system works. Well, if you're so concerned about the system working, you may be less concerned about your own self working, your own inner intelligence working, your own peace of mind, and your own inner satisfaction. So we have to make this choice. And Vashishta is very clear about the liberated sage, who by nature, which means it becomes natural. See, friends, when you start off, this is not by nature. You do it consciously, not being swayed by any movement in the mind. Let it rise and let it fall. We can't control that, and you should not control that. Just let it be and let it exhaust itself. All the notions that exist in your mind, what have you to do with them? Treat it just like a cough. If the body coughs, you don't try to suppress it. It coughs, and it, whatever need to be expelled was expelled by the force of the cough, and it's gone. It doesn't upset your day. It doesn't do something else. It doesn't change your thinking. And so when conditioning coughs, when it acts up, let it act up just like a cough. Let it throw up and let it be done. But let it not interfere with the evaluation of things. Not by suppression, but by engaging the inner intelligence and letting that do the work of looking at things. So that would preclude you from being swayed by any pleasure or notions of pleasure that may arise from the conditioning in the mind. That will also allow you to do the second thing, to do what needs to be done as it arises without any motivation or incentive like fame or what's in it for me or money. It comes down to just that much. It may sound simple, my friends, but to make this natural and ongoing is what we need the help of our practices for. We do it first in a contained environment with our spiritual practices to do things naturally, not to pray, not to do things for any purpose, to do things for the love of it, to do things because we love it. We love God. And so we pray, we worship, we do all the other things, meditate for love of truth. And when we learn to do things in our meditation, in our prayer, because it needs to be done, because it's natural, because it's wisdom, because it's love, we're able to extend this into our day-to-day life. And then do things there without the motivation of incentives and the lot. We spoke about the liberated sage and those two important qualities. Now this brings us to self-effort. Because there is what needs to be done. The question is, how do we deal with things? So what is self-effort? When self-effort arises from conditioning, it's called habitual living. When self-effort arises from a fresh and awakened take on things, it's called intelligent or awakened living. So three things come to mind. Self-effort arises from understanding, an understanding of things, not a remembrance or habitual mode of doing things. Understanding things that have been felt in the heart. That heart which has been exposed to the teachings of scriptures and holy ones. So we come in with three things. When we study and when we read, the inner core of our being or our heart gets exposed to these teachings. Those things reside in the heart. About taking a fresh take on things, looking at things fresh, how conditioning interferes, and the whole lot. That looks at life in that light, and that from that understanding, a fresh take on everything arises, and we see what needs to be done. That doing what needs to be done, that happens in light of that fresh understanding, that has been felt in the heart, that has been exposed to the teachings, that is self-effort. Self-effort does not happen when it arises from conditioning. That is mechanical movement, mechanical thing. Self-effort is this intelligent thing. Now, naturally, when it is based on this, existing habit is going to try to interfere. But existing habit cannot interfere. It can simply rise up within the awareness of the mind. That mind that is looking at life intelligently, in an awakened manner, is also aware of these concepts. So you've got awareness of what happens outside, and you've got awareness of what rises inside. And by this discerning wisdom of this is what is inside, but I'm dealing with things outside, it is overcome. All of this habitual way is overcome by this inner strength of looking at habit looking at things as they are, and picking things as they are, or your fresh take on things. That is the inner strength. It's not a muscle and grinded type of thing. It's a very intelligent thing. Looking inward and seeing what rises, let it rise. Let all the conditioning and notions rise. Why do you identify with it? Don't identify with it. Look at life and deal with it. You don't get upset or angry when a car goes by and makes a noise. Or at least I hope we don't. But let it do what it does. Or a bird flies in the sky, or something happens, or whatever else. Natural things happen. There's noise in the environment. Let it happen. Treat the rise and the fall of these habitual promptings just like noise in the neighborhood. Let it be there. It doesn't concern me. My job is to look at things and deal with things intelligently, to do what needs to be done on its own merit because it needs to be done, and to do it best I can. Why isn't that satisfying? Why isn't that joyful? How does stress come into any kind of action, be it in your workplace, at home, or elsewise? The interference that tries to come in by the voicing of that habitual conditioning is overcome by continually facing reality and trying to understand what needs to be done. So the clash of the noise of the mind versus a fresh take is overcome by continuing to be aware of things as they are. And Vishishta calls this the grinding of teeth, which is actually a grinding down of the mind by just ignoring it. Letting it rise and letting it fall. It rises on residual energy because we've given it importance in the past, and it's going to fall by disuse, by ignoring it. We've got to let that happen. And that process of it rising and falling, some schools of thought, you can call it whatever you will, but it is the empowering of wisdom. Because when that is ignored, the inner intelligence engages life afresh. And this gives you a clear take on what needs to be done. And therefore, we can change fate by present effort. Our current conditions of fate are the result of our conditioning acting in our life. When we live life intelligently, we make new fate. We make new destiny. We make new conditions. And we change fate by present self-effort. This keeping the mind, the pure mind or the whole mind or the inner intelligence, awaken and engaging life, comes down to the essence of the teaching or the essence of all scriptures that deal with reality. To continually divert the impure mind, or the mind that is loaded with conditioning, to pure action by persistent effort. This is the essence of all teachings and all scriptures. This takes inner resolve, relentless vigilance, and courage to stay the course. You have to want to do this. This inner resolve is a sort of fixity in our mind that we say, this is going to be how I live. Continually diverting the impure mind, not by any force. When we see these notions rise, those notions are not different from the intelligence that's going to engage it afresh. Everything in that psychical place is essentially the same, the inner psyche, the inner intelligence. But there are sort of habitual modes of thinking within that awakened intelligence. To let those be, and to let them exhaust themselves so they return back to the inner intelligence. Or, to put it in simpler ways, ignorance gives up its ignorance and returns back to its base. So to continue to divert the mind, when those notions rise in the mind, to let them rise, to let them fall, to let the inner intelligence continue to be engaged, and to do what needs to be done on its own merit. because it needs to be done, is pure action. And this, by persistence, is self-effort. To do this continually is the essence of all scriptures. When we do this continually, we weaken, tremendously weaken all conditioning. This, my friends, is not only preparation for meditation, but the initial stages of meditation or living meditation. When we have been living, watching this, the rise and fall of inner conditioning, while continuing to be engaged in life as it happens, is preparation for meditation and the initial stages of meditation. Then when you sit, you don't have to worry about what do I do about these distractions. All day, if you have not been distracted, you have been meditating. When you come and sit in your prayer area or your meditation area at night or in the evening or in the mornings or whenever you sit, it would become natural to you to let any distractions in the mind rise and fall while you continue to be engaged or watching the inner intelligence watching itself. So this takes resolve. You must want to do this and firmly resolve in your mind and in your heart to do this. The second thing it takes is relentless vigilance, a mind that is watched without remission. And the third thing it takes is courage to stay the course. It's very easy to stay the course initially, but throughout the day, in all conditions, whether they be familiar, unfamiliar, whether they be at home, in a close circle, in work, or to a wide circle of this world we live in, it doesn't matter. To be able to do that requires these three things: resolve, vigilance, and inner courage to stay the course. Now this brings us to our fourth point for today, which is the course of action. We've already talked about the principles of intelligent action. Now we look at the course of action. Action, my friends, is not for the sake of action. Action is a window to our soul, a window to our inner being. Not when the need of action, and it comes up throughout the day, to do what needs to be done, whether it be at work or in the family or at home or wherever. There is not only vigilance on things outside, but there's also this vigilance on things inside. When we see the rise and fall of conditioning, of our notions, of all our prejudices, of all our habitual ways. To be able to see both the outer and the inner at the same time, and to be able to do what needs to be done, is the healthy way to do it. To be swayed or to have the outer dictated by the inner, by habit, by habitual ways, is a bound way to do things. So the purpose of action is to be acted upon, because we're not generally comfortable or normal with looking at the inner. We fully engage the outer. When we're at work, we're fully at work. We're engaged with that. We're not watching the inner promptings that happen either this way or that way. To be able to look at that and to be able to look at this or what's inside takes practice initially. Inner prompting would talk about what's best in your interests. By looking at the situation, you will get a clear read on doing what needs to be done, because it needs to be done on its own merit. Can we not do things because they need to be done? Why does everything have to have what's in my best interest in the equation? When we bring in my best interest in every equation, how can we clearly even see what needs to be done, less respond to what needs to be done? And if we don't do what needs to be done with all of our attention, how can we even do a good job of it? So see, my friends, we thwart our action, even if you talk about materially, We choke our action because of the interference of the mind or what I need to do, what's in my best interest. Whenever we do that, not only do we make bad decisions or not so good decisions, but we make less decisions because we prejudge before doing. Hence, we never do things wholeheartedly. And when we do it that way for a while, we lose the ability to act wholeheartedly. Our inner fabric starts disintegrating and we become weaker. The inability to stir ourselves and rouse ourselves passionately into action, to be passionate about doing things or what needs to be done or what's natural to us on its own merit because it needs to be done. Why do we lose our flame? And when did we lose this flame? Why do we go old inwardly? The body may grow old, the body may age. Why does our will age? Why does our inner psyche age? Why does our enthusiasm age? Why does it have to age? Let the body age a little bit. Let the inner enthusiasm be as vibrant as it was before to do what needs to be done on its own merit. Let this excitement be there in our life. So, my friends, the purpose of action is to be acted on because all our attention is usually diverted externally. We don't see the outer. Action allows us to see the outer. Intelligent action allows us to see the outer and the inner at the same time. To be aware of the inner promptings, to continue to do what needs to be done on its own merit without the interference of these prompting, thus weakening them and empowering a new way of looking at things, which is called direct perception, which leads to direct action. To see it fresh, to do it wholeheartedly, because it needs to be done for no other reason. That calculating mind, my friends, causes endless turmoil and confusion in our lives. That whole mechanism starts disintegrating and dismantling and weakening and returning back to consciousness, which is its source. Your inner strength, your inner confidence, your inner peace increases tremendously. So these are the things that Vasishtha has outlined for us. Let's review some of what we've talked about today. Four things that we talked about. We started with a liberated sage. Those fantastic notions that we have of it may not be up to the mark. One who by nature is not swayed by sense pleasure. That means you can see things clearly and you can do what needs to be done without anything interfering. So, not swayed by sense pleasure and does what needs to be done on its own merit without any interference. This is going to take practice because it's not natural not to be swayed. The idea of what's in it for me or my best interest always tries to interfere. To do things in spite of it, not with suppressing it. Let that notion rise and let it fall. You continue to do what needs to be done. That leads to a liberation from the bondage of conditioning. The second thing we spoke about is self-effort. Self-effort springs from right understanding, from this continual fresh take on things that has been first seen in the heart, that has been exposed to the teachings of the scriptures and the conduct of holy ones. So in the association with teachings and teachers, that is called satsang. When that exposure that we have, broader and whole, fuller ways of looking at things come into our mind. To act in light of that, which means not to be swayed by conditioning and to do what needs to be done, is right self-effort. The third thing we talked about today is what is the essence of all teachings or the essence of all scriptures. To continually divert the mind or the conditioned mind to pure action by persistent effort is self-effort, to do what needs to be done on its own merit because it needs to be done. We stand with life, with everything out there, as a white citizen of the world, to do our duty because it needs to be done without any interference. Will there be interference? Surely. Let it rise, let it fall, let it exhaust itself, just like background noise. What have I to do with it? When you are fully engaged in looking at things as they are and responding or doing what needs to be done, conditioning or foolishness is going to exhaust its own self. You won't have to worry about carting itself or carting it out. It's going to let its own self out of the door. So action, we spoke about the purpose of action. The purpose of action is to be acted on. Because we are not habituated, or it's not natural for us to see the mind. We see life when we go out to work, when we wake up in the morning. We see this world of ours. We see our home. We see our family. We see all of that. To be able to see what is out there without the interference of what is in here, and to be able to continually do what needs to be done, is the purpose for action. So action is both a window to the soul and a means to weaken any interference to that vision of the soul, or you may call it the self, or you may call it any of those things. And that is the purpose of action, to be acted upon. When we put other things like what's in it for me ahead of that, we lose this whole paradigm of awakened living and go back into, or deeper into, conditioned living. Friends, we're still on chapter 2. The next time we'll continue where we left off. Thank you for joining me today. To download this video, its audio, or a PDF with the main points, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.